Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13th, 1999.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, and welcome to another edition of the very best in live overnight talk radio with a twist, always with a twist. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole and worldwide on the internet, thanks to Broadcast.com and Intel Corporation. They provide the streaming video. My local phone company came out today and fixed, I believe, my ISDN line and my frame rate line, frame relay line, whatever it is. So I think we might have streaming video up there. I had to take a look and see. It looks like the program is running, so I would say that we do. But in the process, I've noticed now that they've knocked out a couple of my other telephone lines. So some days you win, some days you don't. But I think we're up on streaming video right now. In a moment, coming up is Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. He's got a number of things for you, and I have one for you that I think he'll like or be interested in. Well, there was an earthquake in Kansas City today. A very rare earthquake, about 3.0 Kansas City today. I have been told by somebody that I have come to trust to watch Rocky Flats. And I'm not going to say any more about that than that. Watch carefully at Rocky Flats. And we'll see what comes of that. A compromise package financing the continued bombardment of Yugoslavia and aid to Central America was agreed upon by House Senate bargainers Thursday night, so the money will go flying off to this insane bombing for peace thing that we've got going over in Yugoslavia. Bombing for peace. That's like reality. Reality has a virus. That was Peter Gersten last night. I'm still working on that one. For me, with what's going on in Yugoslavia, reality does have a virus. Anyway, more money for the bombs. There is a child stuck in a well again. A toddler, more than 15 feet into a narrow well. Firefighters trying to dig a tunnel to rescue the boy. They could hear the 17-month-old crying, but out of the reach of any rescue equipment. The well is 20 to 25 feet deep and 8 to 10 inches wide. Oh, boy. The driver of a charter bus that crashed and killed 22 people was fired from bus companies in 1996 and 1989 after testing positive for marijuana four times. And still they drive. Boy, I'll tell you. Now, Peter Davenport is normally the kind of guy who would be reporting on what I'm about to tell you about. And he is, in fact, going to be reporting on UFOs that have been recently seen. But try this one on for size. This is news that you probably didn't get elsewhere. Art, I just returned from a three-week business trip to Europe, and this article appeared in the April 27th, 99 newspaper called The Express in London. The headline is, Pilot Tells of His Close Encounter with a UFO. Listen to this. A British charter jet has had a close encounter with a UFO said to be the size of a battleship. The shocked pilot and crew of a debonair BAE-146 plane reported being buzzed by a long, cylindrical object as they flew over the North Sea. Here we go again with the North Sea. Three other pilots have also independently logged seeing the bright object, 58 miles off the coast of Denmark. Last night, the Civil Aviation Authority confirmed a comprehensive report of the pilot sighting had, in fact, been received. The report says the captain and crew first became aware of the object after the underside of their plane was immersed in, quote, an incandescent light, end quote. A CAA spokeswoman said, quote, the captain reported seeing an unnatural bright light below his aircraft while flying at 28,000 feet. The area below him was illuminated for about 10 seconds by incandescent light, and it was certainly not a light from another plane. Three other aircraft saw it moving at a high speed or at times static. However, air traffic controllers were informed, and they confirmed there were, at that time, no other planes in the vicinity. Ah, but the plot thickens. 5 minutes later, there was a brief radar return from a spot 76 miles away. We believe there was no danger involved, they said. The Luton-based, it looks like six-seater plane, that may be 96-seater plane, was flying company executives from Lingpyong, Sweden, to Humberside Airport. A spokesman for Debonair, which runs cut-price flights throughout Europe, said Chief Executive Franco Mascola had been informed that, quote, a great red light in the sky had been spotted near one of the company's planes. At one stage, the report says, the object came to an abrupt halt, very important phrase, an abrupt halt before accelerating past the airliner at, quote, thousands of miles an hour. A CAA source says the object was tracked by a military radar station in Yorkshire after it entered UK airspace. A spokesman for the 6,000-member British Pilots Association said, we get reports of this nature from our members, but they are few and far between in the past 10 years or so. I'd say there have been around 6 cases of UFOs being sighted. Many pilots are reluctant to make such claims because it tends to lay them open to ridicule, so when they do go so far as to make a report, we do expect it to be given credence. A spokesman for the Ministry of Defense insisted there were no military aircraft in that area, adding, we saw nothing. In a moment, Peter Davenport. Well, here comes a man with the kind of dedication it takes to stay up. He likes to stay up on the phone all night long and listen to people who call his National UFO reporting line to report stories that people were told by their parents and their grandparents. He is Peter Davenport. Hi, Peter.
Greetings, Art. That statement is not exactly correct. The luster of taking UFO reports died some while ago, but I do have a certain dedication to this job.
Yeah, I bet it's great. At about 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings, and you stumble over, and, hey, my granddad saw one about 80 years ago. Let me tell you about it.
Yeah, and they're calling from the bar.
Yeah, about 80 years ago.
Yep.
Anyway, listen, what do you think of my report here at the beginning? Now, that was something the size of a battleship seen not by one, but by 3 commercial airliners.
Yeah, it's a very interesting report, and, you know, as many reports as we take at the National UFO Reporting Center, we don't come close to getting even a significant fraction of all the reports that are reported to UFO investigators around the world. So there are a lot of reports that come to us that surprise even me.
But, Peter, this North Sea thing, now, this is not the first of this kind. Moving at thousands, they said, of miles per hour, and then, of course, stopping at one point, the size of a battleship seen by 3 aircraft, something is really, really going on.
That's right. I couldn't agree more with the statement, Art. Actually, my reaction to a UFO, or let's call it an anomalous object the size of the battleship, is that that's relatively small compared to some that have been reported to us. The lights over Phoenix, that so-called case that occurred in March of 1997, the one of at least two and perhaps three or even four objects that went over Arizona on the 13th of March, 1997, Thursday night,
yep,
was at least, Art, 1 mile in width, and we think the evidence places it between 2 and 3 miles wide, and it was longer than it was wide. I have a videotape of that object. I am not speaking of the lights that were seen at 9:30 or 10 o'clock that night. I'm talking about the object that was seen at 8:15.
Right.
And, of course, a big difference. The government is the U.S. government is trying to make the American people believe, I think, that they were one and the same event. They clearly were not.
Well, here's something one could be at least reasonably suspicious of. If we accept there are UFOs, I do. If we accept that our government is in some way aware of them, and there is an incident of that magnitude that would occur over a major U.S. city like Phoenix, then it would be really good cover to come out right after the incident and drop a bunch of flares, and your cover story comes down with it.
Exactly my feeling, too.
Mm-hmm.
My suspicion is that the U.S. military must have contingency plans sitting on the shelf such that when a major event, for example, the lights over Phoenix, occurs, exactly as you say, they know exactly what to do. They launch aircraft. They launch flares.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, the flares, if they were flares seen at between 9:30 and 10 o'clock 2 years ago southwest of Phoenix, were in fact military flares, then they were somewhere between, I'm going on memory now, but 8 to 11,000 feet above ground level over the Gila Bend firing range.
Mm.
Now, those flares, and this point I suspect I've made before on Coast to Coast, and many other investigators down in the Phoenix area have too, that is awfully high for a flare to be launched. Those flares are designed to be released from A-10s close to the ground to illuminate targets on the ground. Now, of course, their story was that they were jettisoning those flares because they're not allowed to land with them still attached to their wings.
Mm.
I would like to know whether that is in fact the case or not. We're getting a lot of screwy information from our government. The government today, in my opinion, appears to be a government that is set more on prevarication and deception and partial explanation of things than it is an open government dedicated to...
Part of that is just the inertia of bureaucracy. And, you know, you can know that by first working for a small company and then working for a really, really, really big company. You know, mostly the left hand and right hand don't know what they're doing in these large companies. They become too big for their own profitability many times, and imagine that magnified by a gazillion, and you've got our government.
Yeah, and they have $1.77 trillion of our dollars to spend this upcoming year.
I know.
It's a lot of money to obfuscate with, and yeah. I think that's exactly what they're doing. But I'm intrigued by your report over the North Sea and England. We're getting a lot of reports over our website from the UK and from Europe now. You must have a lot of listeners and followers over there. Also, we have taken many, many reports over the last 4 years or so that place UFOs in proximity to commercial airliners. In fact, as I have reported on Coast to Coast in the past, Art, when we were approached by members of the U.S. federal government just about 2 years ago, it was April 28th when they contacted us, 1997,
mm-hmm.
The reason for my meeting with them, they wanted to know everything we could tell them about UFOs allegedly in proximity to commercial airliners.
Mm-hmm.
So this phenomenon...
Did you tell them about the one down in Mexico that actually collided with a UFO and had damage?
You know, I didn't, but they're well aware of Jaime Maussan's fine work down in Mexico City. He has an astonishing collection of videotapes. I saw them down in Laughlin in late February. And, You know, in fact, when I saw his presentation at Laughlin, something occurred to me. They had a dramatic sighting over Mexico City on the 14th of November, 1997, and Jaime showed a very dramatic, very, very convincing videotape of a huge cluster of lights moving across Mexico City. The reason I mention that, Art, is you no doubt will recall the program we did together on the 14th of November, 1997.
Oh, yes.
When those lights went over the Northwest and the U.S. Air Force declared that they were fragments from a Russian booster.
That's right.
That had been launched 2 days ago. That was on Friday, the 14th of November, 1997. That night...
Weren't those fragments that occasionally stopped and hovered?
You know, that's very interesting. I know you make your point in a facetious or jocular sense.
I do, yes.
But you are exactly correct, because what many people don't realize is that we have evidence collected that night and on subsequent days that there were, in fact, three or perhaps four waves of objects that went across the West Coast that night.
That's right.
Over the Northwest, over roughly Salem, Oregon, Reno, Nevada, and down over Arizona as well. Mm-hmm. It was a very busy night. And it's one of the really very interesting things about going to some of these major conferences where there are several speakers from around the world is comparing notes and comparing dates of incidents. And oftentimes they coincide, events in other countries with events in the United States.
Now that's interesting, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot going on. But I'm delighted to be on tonight. We've had some very interesting reports just this afternoon and evening, and it's been relatively quiet for the last 3, maybe 4 weeks, which is something I welcome. It seems to run in waves, and I would swear that they coincide with your absence from the radio. When you take a vacation, UFO activity seems to slow down.
I know, and the rest of the world goes to hell. We go to war. God knows what happens.
Exactly.
Earthquakes occur. You're absolutely right. UFO activity comes to a screeching halt when I go, everything else goes to hell.
Exactly. It makes me wonder if perhaps you may have more listeners around the world than those who show up on the listeners' polls. One never knows. But we've had more reports in the last 10 hours than I think we've had in the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, so she's getting hot again, huh?
Well, we've had a cluster of them. This afternoon, about 4:30, there was a very dramatic sighting over Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis!
And I see we're coming up on a break here. Maybe we can play this when we come back after the break. I'll give a little preface, though. Gentleman was standing outside about 4:30 this afternoon.
Yes.
That is Central Standard Time, and he saw a white sphere streak across the sky and disappear in a small cloud, not to come out again. And when we come back, I'll play about a 2-minute audio cut of what that gentleman had to report to us tonight.
Good enough. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. And by the way, get out a paper and a pencil. We'll tell you how you can get hold of Peter, not really at 2:30 in the morning to tell him about what your granddad said, but if you do have a sighting that's occurring now, he's always willing to take your call. And so we'll give you that info and a lot more. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Far, we've been traveling far.
Listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13, 1999.
By the way, for the latest news, not fit to print exactly, or maybe broadcast. Actually, it's a very well-told story, and I won't say any more than that. For the latest news, check our latest news items area of the website, www.artbell.com. I think you will find it very instructive. And I mean very instructive, just in case you somehow have missed out of the somehow you've missed out on the chronology of events. It was delivered by a news service earlier today. That's www.artbell.com. Back now to Peter Davenport and the report that we teased you with at the bottom of the hour, Peter.
Why don't I just go to this audio cut, Art? It's about 2 minutes and 15 seconds long. This is what allegedly was seen over Memphis, Tennessee, right on the Mississippi River, at about 4:30 this afternoon, Thursday, the 13th of May. Here we go. This is what the gentleman had to report to us.
All right.
Okay, this afternoon, here in Memphis, Tennessee, I was looking up at the sky, which had only a scattering of clouds, and I saw an object moving in a southeast to northwest direction at a high speed. This was at about the altitude of the clouds. It was the few clouds which were there, and it was traveling approximately the speed of a jet aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a clear view of it. It was white, and it was spherical in shape.
Mm-hmm.
There was no motor sound of any kind. It was quiet out. And this craft sped across the sky and went into a small cloud and did not emerge from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very surprising to me because it was not a meteor. There was no trail. I had a good view of it. It was distinctly spherical. And it was moving much too fast for a plane which would fly at that altitude.
And what direction were you looking when you saw it, please?
I was looking due north.
Mm-hmm. And it was traveling in what direction?
It was traveling from southwest to northeast.
And did you see it, please?
This was about 4:30 in the afternoon Central Time.
Mm-hmm. Central Daylight Time. And how long do you estimate you witnessed it, please?
I saw this for only about 3 seconds, but when you're watching it, it seems like a lot longer. But it couldn't have been any longer than that because it only, you know, traversed the sky, went into a small cloud, and did not emerge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I had a very good view of it. I was... There was nothing else in the air other than a few scattered clouds.
Mm-hmm. And was it above the clouds or below the clouds? Could you tell?
It was about the level of clouds. In the northern sky, there were only a few clouds there.
Mm-hmm.
And this one just zipped across the sky and went into the cloud, and small cloud, by the way, and just did not come out.
Mm. That is not unlike a number of reports we've had over recent months of objects during daylight hours, unexplained objects streaking across the sky and just disappearing from sight.
But behind a small circular cloud.
Yeah.
That's really odd.
Yeah. Well, it's not clear to me whether the object flew into the cloud and stopped or whether it might simply have been obscured by the cloud, obscured from the witness's vantage point or view. It might have turned and gone directly away from him, so it appeared to just disappear in the cloud. And he couldn't see it as it was going away. There are any number of possibilities here, and I dare say, Art, we will probably never know what it did after it entered that cloud, of course.
All right, well, I guess we better move on. I know you've got several reports.
Yeah, let me go to Sebring, Florida. There was a sighting out there about, I think it was 9:20 this evening, that is Eastern Daylight Time, of an intensely bright light that was seen by a gentleman to streak from east to west across the night sky. Let me just go to the cut. I think it's about just over a minute or so. And this is what was reported from Sebring, Florida this evening.
Okay, I had stepped outside, and we have a TV in the backyard where I was watching a basketball game, and I just happened to, it was dark, and I just happened to notice a light start from the eastern horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And as I started to notice it, I guess the first thing I thought was like a shooting star. I was going to say like normal money, money, money. And then I realized that I was watching this traveling at a high rate of speed and still seeing it. and I even started to walk towards the house and watched it go across to the west, and had plenty of time, but yet this was such a terrific speed that it was definitely nothing I've ever seen in my life, and I'm 42 years old.
Uh-huh.
And then I ran inside, and I told what I seen. It was a brilliant white light that I don't know what point I picked it up, but I just noticed it, and it was traveling relatively low from the horizon, the way I saw it. It was something I've never experienced before.
What was its size relative to, for example, a star in the sky or the full moon?
Matter of fact, I don't know what it looks like from where you're at now, but if you look out, I think it's Venus that's
yes.
off to the... It's that color of white, and it was that kind of intensity, but yet it was traveling at such a speed. It left no tail. It wasn't like a comet. It wasn't like anything.
Yes. That was this evening at about 9:20 p.m. over Sebring, Florida.
No, we are having a little flap, huh?
Yeah. In addition to those, though, we got a very intriguing report out of Wisconsin this evening, and I might just go and to this audio cut here in a moment or two. I don't know what to make of this report, but it comes from an official source. I don't think I'm going to name that source tonight, but
that's a good way to lose sources, actually.
Exactly, and it's from the aviation industry, and we give those people special dispensation when it comes to. Identifying them, because they are among our very best sources of information. But
sure.
In a nutshell, what this gentleman will describe is a very unusual event in Wisconsin, somewhere west of Eagle River. It generated apparently a number of reports or telephone calls to the local sheriff's office. I think this gentleman will mention the sheriff's office or the county of the sheriff. And mentions a sonic boom and a mushroom cloud.
Mushroom.
I don't know what to make of this. I play it in part because if there's anybody out in Wisconsin who is witness to this event, we would certainly be most grateful for any kind of reports they could provide us over the Internet. Let me just go to this audio cut. It runs only about 30 seconds or so, but
all right.
Here we go.
We've had a few reports of explosion in the western sky from the... Pinellas County Sheriff's Department near Eagle River, Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. Also some other reports from the Upper Peninsula. An explosion in the western sky with a mushroom-like cloud, and probably sounded like a sonic boom, possibly. From what they're reporting is a explosion. But maybe you find it interesting and want to research it or whatever. Just informational stuff for you. And I don't think we're going to get any... definite report of what it was, so that's it. Have fun with it.
Oh, now he was literally inviting investigation, obviously.
Yes, he was.
So if people saw it, Peter, let's stop right now and give out a little information.
Yeah, what we would really prefer, if anybody saw that or any other sighting this afternoon or evening, we would be most grateful if they would simply go to our website. And that website address is one of these easy-to-remember website addresses. It's www.ufocenter.com. UFOcenter.com.
That's really easy. The only problem is we're still only at about 30% of the public with computer capability.
Right. Let me give out my mailing address. People are certainly welcome to send us written reports. Our mailing address in Seattle, Art. The first line is NUFORC for National UFO Reporting Center. The next line is P.O. Box 45623. 45623.
Right.
Third line is University Station. And the fourth and last line is Seattle, Washington, zip code 98145.
And that's also good for donations because you operate on a shoestring up there, I know. And so a few bucks... would be really nice if people could send it off at the expense of boring people. Let's give it one more time. The address, please.
The address is NUFORC. The second line is P.O. Box 45623. The third line is University Station. And the fourth line is Seattle, Washington. And the zip code is 98145. And let me give out our hotline telephone number, if I may, please, too.
In other words, if something is imminently going on, if you walk outside and you see something happening now, you pick up the phone and you call this number.
And our hotline number in Seattle is area code 206-722-3000. That number again is area code 206-722-3000. And I would like to add, Art, that we are taking so many phone calls, a lot of them about Venus, I'm afraid to say, that we prefer if people call about only truly dramatic sightings or dramatic cases. If they have past sighting reports from 4 or 5 or 6 days ago, if there's any way they can get to a friend's computer, if they don't have access to the Internet themselves, and just go to our website. That website, again, is ufocenter.com. We have a standardized report form on our website. They can click on it, and a report form will come up on their screen. They can just fill in the boxes, click on it, and send it directly to us.
However, if Venus is about to land, definitely call.
Yeah, or if they see aliens dropping out of the bottom of Venus, they're free to call at any time. But the UFO okay. Center may not be staffed in that event. I'll warn you now.
What? Now, there's an interesting, humorous little sidebar. If there actually was a landing, Peter, mm-hmm. what would you do?
Well, I think I'd be here handling the data, Art.
That's what I thought.
You know, in a sense, I think what we really are is a sentry to the American people. And as you know, you've been in the military, you know there are only two rules to being a sentry. One is you never leave your post
That's
unless
right.
you're relieved. And the second principle of being a sentry is you always observe principle one. So,
That's right.
In my opinion...
And you can also leave your post by falling asleep. That's to be remembered.
In my opinion, we are dealing with something that is very real. And if it is real, then it is of tremendous consequence to not only the American people, but all living things on this planet.
Correct.
I think we are dealing with something that must be gotten out to the public. They must understand that we are dealing with something real. That's part of... I think it explains the compulsion I think I feel to play some of these audio clips to let our listeners know, to hear it with their own ears.
Oh, no, you're right. I mean, it's one thing for you to come on here and say, here's the report, here's what the fellow saw, but to hear it from the person involved, that's a different story.
Yeah. When you hear the emotion in their voice, you hear the inflection, you hear them, oh, there are a lot of cues, a lot of aspects to a report like this that make it, give it a human side. And I think it's very important that people hear the raw data with their own ears. You know, let me go back to a case that occurred just about almost a week, exactly a week ago out in Hawaii.
All right.
You know, we have talked about fireballs on many, many occasions. I know many of your guests have done the same thing.
Oh, yes.
Let me play just a short report. I think it's about 50 seconds long, a report that came in from a young woman. She was on the Leaky Highway out near Honolulu. I have no idea where that highway is. I've never been to Hawaii. But let me play for our listeners just a short audio cut of a report we got a week ago. Here we go from Hawaii on the 5th of May.
All right.
I want to report a sighting that me and my boyfriend both saw last night, Thursday night at approximately 10 o'clock at night. We were going over the Leaky Highway. And this green ball, like, went right above our car, right above freeway signs, and it just, like, for a couple seconds, and it just, like, and then it didn't streak across the sky, but it went out. It was just, like bright lime green, like the color of a Mountain Dew soda can or something. And it seemed like it was, like, honeycomb-shaped or pentagon-shaped or something weird like that, but it was bright green. It was, like, very, very bright. And it was very short, a couple seconds. I almost ran off the road.
I called that young lady just shortly after this report came in and talked to her at length. And she said that lime green object that streaked across her head a week ago tonight in Hawaii was larger, from her vantage point, was larger than a full moon.
Pretty big.
And it had very symmetrical shape to it, and she said she could see surface characteristics on it
really?
Through the intensely green light.
Really?
The interesting thing is it left no tail. It did not explode into fragments the way meteors or fireballs or bolides frequently do, and it simply winked out, and the illumination was constant. When a meteor or a meteorite comes into the atmosphere, traditionally it will flare up like a match, and then it will die out or explode or when it fragments.
Sure.
This one simply went across their car, and she said it was not streaking. It was moving at a constant precession across her head. It passed behind a highway, overhead highway sign, and just suddenly disappeared from sight, and there was no sonic boom.
Well, I suppose it's possible that an object could skip in and out of our atmosphere, and it might produce an effect like that, mightn't it?
It could, but for a fireball to be the apparent size of the disk of a full moon, usually if they're skipping off the atmosphere,
that
they probably don't bury into the atmosphere more than 10 or 20 miles.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're still 80 or so miles above the ground, the surface of the Earth. So it doesn't, to my way of thinking, it doesn't seem consistent with an event like that. But we're getting reports like this all the time. A similar event occurred over Vincennes, Indiana, just yesterday, Wednesday morning, at about 4:45 a.m., except that one was orange, and the gentleman saw it for about 15 seconds. That's a pretty long fireball. If anybody was up in Vincennes, Indiana, or in that vicinity, Wednesday morning, the 12th of May, and saw that object, we would be most grateful for any kind of report they could give us to corroborate this event.
I wish everybody had a computer.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the minority of the population still does. So let's do two things. One, again, you can use donations desperately. Two, you can make reports by mail. And so let's give out the address and phone number one more time.
Yep. Our mailing address in Seattle, Washington is P.O. Box 45623. The next line is University Station. That's the name of our post office. And the third line is Seattle, Washington, zip code 98145. And our hotline telephone number is area code 206-722-3000. And it usually operates from about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning to midnight.
All right. Have you ever been awakened at about 2 or 3 in the morning with just a cascade of calls from something hot going on somewhere?
Regrettably, I have, Art, and I wish it were not the case. To be honest, I usually turn the phone off about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. I was beginning to suffer severely from sleep deprivation, and we prefer to take calls between about 8 a.m. and midnight if people can arrange it.
So if something were to come down and eat Hoboken at 3 a.m., we might not hear about it till the next day.
And since Hoboken may deserve it, who knows? I apologize to those folks in New Jersey. But we welcome any information, and it's always a privilege to be here. I think you're to be commended, Art, for covering this subject so extensively.
Thank you, Peter. Well, it deserves it. I mean, my gosh, it's got to be the biggest story ever told. Peter, thank you.
Thank you, Art. Nice
Good night.
To be here. Good night.
They're either theirs or they're ours. Either way, it's a big story. We'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13th, 1999.
Good morning, everybody, or evening, depending on your time zone. Great to be here. In a moment, Steve Shank is going to talk to you about Y2K and why you should be storing food, not just for Y2K, but for this godforsaken weather we're having or any other eventuality. We're going to be talking about a variety of things. Let me hit you with a little news. There was a very rare earthquake in Kansas City today. The earthquake registered about 3.0. That's fairly small, but rather uncommon, very uncommon for Kansas. The a professor at the geology department at the University of Kansas said, quote, it's an unusual event, but nothing to be alarmed about. And the Mississippi continues to go in the same direction. Looks like in Washington, there's a compromise package to finance the continuing insanity dropping on Yugoslavia, bombs for peace. So they're coming to an agreement to send more money for more bombs for more peace? Question mark. Also, our NATO planes, mainly, of course, U.S. planes, are preparing to begin their missions from Turkey. Apparently, Turkey has given permission. We have a child in a well in Kansas again. Remember the child in the well? This one's down 15 feet, a very narrow well, and they can hear this poor 17-month-old crying. I would imagine CNN and company are rushing to the scene. All the networks. The bus driver who had the wreck that killed 22, we just have learned, was fired from bus companies back in 1996 and 1989 after testing positive for marijuana four times, not once, but four times, fired twice, and he was still driving a bus. Boris Yeltsin in Russia is being tried for treason, genocide, and various other crimes like ruining the Soviet Union and bringing the genocide part, by the way, is the sad state of affairs that the Russian people are in. Australia's Tasmanian tiger, a marsupial wolf believed to be extinct, may be, check this out, reborn in a few years with geneticists cloning it from perfectly preserved baby tigers kept in museums. Australian Museum Director Mike Archer said the discovery of a baby tiger preserved in a jar in his Sydney museum had encouraged him over the past year to investigate the possibility of bringing the wolf back to life using its DNA. Isn't that interesting? I have a raft of Y2K reports here, no doubt sent to me by people in anticipation of Steve Shank being here this evening. Long before Y2K set people onto the current path to self-sufficiency, Steve Shank was educating families of the importance and advantages of this way of life. Raised on a dairy farm in Minnesota, Steve learned early in life the importance of hard work and the value of family reserves. Key word, reserves. The youngest of six, he was raised by parents who managed to keep the family farm through the Great Depression. As a successful executive for one of the top three U.S. automakers, wonder which one, Steve stepped away from that position to pursue a career helping thousands of families become self-sufficient. Over the last 20 years, he has distinguished himself as the foremost expert on long-term storable foods. Steve is presently director of the J. Michael Stevens Group. His capacity is to implement shipments of storable food families nationwide. Now, that said, I'm breaking one of my own rules. I don't have sponsors as guests on the show. I have a strict rule against that, personal one. But I broke it myself. And let me tell you straight up front, there is no remuneration in any way. This is not a paid program. This is not an infomercial. It's not intended to be. He didn't come to me. I asked him to come on the program. And I think as you listen to Steve, you will shortly know why. So stand by. That's coming up. Steve Shank coming next. Listen, one more item, and that is for the latest on what's going on in a pretty wild ride, you might check the number one headline as you scroll down my webpage. That's all I'm going to say. www.artbell.com. The first headline will give you a chronology of events. It was really strange. A news service printed this story earlier today, and somebody sent me the URL, and it blew me away, because whoever wrote this, I have no idea who it is. Well, I do, actually, because the name is there. Whoever wrote this got it right. The chronology of events is just about exactly right, so we put a link up to it. It's the first item. You're going to want to see it now. Now, to Salt Lake City and Steve Shank. Steve, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you on the air. Have you done many talk shows?
Oh, a fair number.
Fair number, huh?
Yeah, I bounce around a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you to stay good and close to the phone.
Okay.
Oh, that's much better. You are in Salt Lake City, right?
Just a tad outside of it. I'm in American Fork, actually, but that's close enough for marbles.
Right. You're a Mormon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me generally what it is about Mormons and stored food? I mean, everybody sort of knows that Mormons are told to store food, how much a year's food, or as much as they can, or what's the deal with Mormons anyway?
There are a lot of deals with Mormons, aren't I? That's an open question. I don't want to touch that.
With regard to storage of food.
With regard to storage of food, okay. It has been counsel for many, many years that in the event that, it's just prudent, that's all, to have a storage of food. You got to realize, I was raised, my daddy was 62 when I was born, Art. And so we kind of skipped a generation, but the old timers always had some food in, a little bit of cash. They had their homes in most cases paid for, and they virtually could weather just about anything. You said in the opening remarks about me that my folks were able to save their farm during the Great Depression.
Right.
That was exceptional, but a lot of the small farmers were able to because they didn't need resources from the outside. They grew their own food. They had some place to stay. But the LDS, is the way we refer to Mormons out here. That stands for Latter-day Saints.
Right.
Isn't that actually the name of the church? But we've been counseled just through prudence to put in some food. There have been various suggestions, but it's open to the family's discretion pretty much. At one time, some of the folks, Ezra Tass Benson was LDS, and he was the Secretary of Agriculture under Eisenhower. And he came back, and he was a great advocate of preparation because he'd been through the experience of the reparations in Germany and Europe after World War II and saw the impact of lack of food and the control of food by some of the more socialist countries.
Mm-hmm.
And what that could mean to people. And so very simply, it's just counsel. It's just wisdom.
But it is generally adhered to, isn't it, by the majority of LDS members?
The concept is accepted very well just because it makes very good sense. And the leadership has made a strong argument for the importance of a family being secure with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was long before Y2K and any disaster mongering that was going on. It just happens to be a fact that a little reserve of food places protection or a reserve behind every other economic factor within a family.
We'll get to. I'm sorry to interrupt. Look, it's not just Y2K. Look at what occurred the other day. Look at the tornadoes that we had tearing through the center part of the country, through Oklahoma City and so forth. Do you know that the biggest tornado they had came within 1 mile per hour of being an F6 tornado? That is scientifically impossible. The scientists say you could not have an F6 tornado in our atmosphere. It simply could not occur, no matter what. And we came within 1 mile per hour of that. We're going through some kind of weather hiccup or change, permanent or short, I don't know. But it definitely is changing.
Well, not just the weather. I mean, you've had various guests on your show that are talking about the upheavals within the crust of the Earth, the possibility of the continental plate slipping and Phoenix becoming a waterfront community, the number of earthquakes and volcanic activity that has increased tremendously in terms of statistical analysis and comparative relationships to the past. We're going through some very interesting times. They're exciting times, but for some they're quite scary.
What do you think we're, just a sort of an out-on-the-limb question, Steve, what do you think we are going through right now? You want to venture a guess?
Oh, my goodness, that could cause me a lot of consternation here. I think that we have four juggernauts coming at us, Art.
I'm sorry, repeat that?
I think that we have four juggernauts coming at us.
Four?
We have weather conditions and changes and climatic conditions that are pretty much unprecedented. In the known history and weather reporting of our country and the
world. That's
for
sure.
We have political upheavals. We've got the worldwide government in the offing that some are looking at with some concern. We have the Y2K, of course, which is a, in my opinion, a giant colossal technological oops that could cause us some severe problems. And then, of course, we have a large contingency of families across the country that are deeply Christian and looking at the Book of Revelations and saying, hey, my goodness, then is now.
End times.
Yeah, possibly. And you see, you know, in the bio, you referred to me as an expert. I know the definition of that word, Art, and in my case it probably refers to a drip under pressure. But my opinions might not mean anything, but I don't think it makes any difference. You see, no matter how we worry about the future, the conditions, what's happening now, we can't change what may happen. However, we can deal with the eventuality of something happening.
Well, let me ask you about the hardest first.
Yeah.
Let's say that we are now living in the end times.
Okay.
And no man shall really know precisely, but let's say we're in the end times.
Okay.
Pray tell, what good would it do to store food or get ready or get shelter for the end times?
Gee. Are we loading these questions?
Absolutely. I load all my questions. The other three are going to be obvious. But, I mean, really, if it is the end times, well...
Well, you know, one could just take the attitude that some of the defeatists that back a few years were looking at the nuclear situation and saying, well, doggone it, Art, I think I just want to go stand on ground zero and have them take me first because I don't want to have to put up with the times and the events.
Well, I still somewhat adhere to that train of thought. If there was a full nuclear exchange, by the way, something unfortunately you can't rule out these days.
I understand.
I'm not sure that there'd be a world worth living in, and really the survivors would be the more unfortunate than the initial victims.
I understand, and I agree to a certain extent with you, but I happen to have a bit of an attitude problem. I'm sure that'll come up through the rest of our conversation.
It's all right.
I'm kind of a diehard that says, well, now wait a minute. I've read some of the books that talk about the fact that most people assume that in a nuclear situation that 80% of the people will be wiped out and the last 20% won't have a life worth living.
Right.
With a little bit of understanding, at least it's my perception, and I'm in no way really knowledgeable about the subject, it's my perception that if people will appraise themselves, in other words, forewarned is forearmed, and just understand how fallout works, how radiation works, that literally they can, by just a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of preparation, a little bit of understanding, turn the statistics around so that 80% would survive and 20% would be lost.
Could that really be done? Because, Steve, you would have radiation with half-lives going out a long, long way. Even though the initial radiation would lessen within perhaps a couple of weeks even, there would be a long-term killer situation. I mean, I read On the Beach and...
I know.
All the rest of it. I mean, is that not true?
But let me put it this way. If it is, it doesn't make any difference. If it isn't, it doesn't make any difference. If I take my philosophy and say, I'm going to learn what I feel I need to know, what some of the, quote, experts say that you can do to protect yourself, fact is, I'm going to be here anyway.
You're going to give it a shot.
You bet. Instead of saying, well, I don't think there's probably much I can do, I'm going to do all I can do, and then if I get zapped, I guess maybe I got zapped.
The end times question was a lot harder, huh?
The end times question?
Was a lot harder.
Not really.
Well, yes, it was. I mean, if truly they are the end times, and the Lord is coming back, and everybody out of the pool, then in that case, you really might want to be at the front of the bus, if possible.
Again, one of the things, there are a lot of folks that feel that the righteous will be taken and pulled out of the mess.
Right.
Let's not talk about that, but very simply, all I'm doing is sharing my viewpoints, and I'm not saying this is right, Art. I could be wrong. In fact, I know I was once. I thought I made a mistake. But
I mean, imagine if they really were end times and the righteous were sucked up.
Okay.
And you had gone to a bunker and you came out and all that was left was, a bunch of bikers or something. I don't know.
Well, first of all, I own a Harley, so I'd fit in well with them. And I hope that maybe I might not be here to greet the bikers.
There you go.
I could be sucked up.
Yeah, snatched right out of however deep a shelter you might find.
There you go.
In other words, he'd know where you are.
That's true.
All right. Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, Steve. Steve Shank is my guest, and we're going to really move on to the more practical things that we're facing. The weather. A world government, that's good. And, of course, Y2K, the big one, Y2K. We're going to ask where we are with Y2K. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Again, I say, go check the first item on my website under headlines. It's a rather authoritative chronology. All right. Good news for a change. A little bit of good news. Authorities have rescued a 17-month-old boy from a well near his Kansas home late Thursday after a delicate operation involving dozens of emergency personnel. The boy named Jesse suffered only minor injuries, was taken to a local hospital. They got him by actually tunneling horizontally to where he was, 25 to 30 feet deep. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Dramatic stuff, and you may recall the last child caught in a well. Steve Shank is my guest, and he'll be back in a moment. We're talking about really what's going on in the world. Steve Shank is about to be back, but there's something I want to say. I'm kind of proud of myself in a lot of ways. Today, as you know, I live out here in the country, not far from Death Valley. desert, actually. But we have an advantage. We have very, very good water. The nation's second largest aquifer runs beneath our feet. And so water wells are the order of the day out here, and I have a water well. Today, I went off-grid. I went off-grid today. I've been planning this for a long time, and I have enough solar power and next week wind power to power my well. And by the way, noticed my local electric cooperative sell power back to the power company. That's what I've been doing. I've been that's been one of my projects. I have gone, so today is kind of a celebration day for me in a way. Going off grid. That's it. The wires are disconnected. There's no power going out to my well. None whatsoever. It's all right there in batteries, inverters, solar panels, and next week wind generators. So I'm kind of proud of that, actually. About 520 amp hours available at any given moment, with a charge rate presently with just the panels of about 52 volts at 20 amps. Can you imagine that? So the inverters churn out 230 volts at about 60 amp hours capacity. That's quite a bit. And that's what I've been working on. And so I went off grid today. Steve, welcome back.
Hi, Art.
Hi. It really was kind of a proud moment for me when I saw the power company's 220 volt lines capped and disconnected. It was kind of cool.
Why was it cool, Art?
It was cool because it gives you a feeling of, well, security, independence, and accomplishment.
You know what that's all about? It's all about what you and I have been talking about for quite some months now. It's called liberty.
Liberty, yeah, freedom.
Yep,
that's
freedom
right.
To choose. The extent to which we as families are dependent is the extent to which we've forfeited our liberty to other sources. The extent to which we can become self-sufficient and sustain ourselves no matter what. Let me ask you this. Do you really care right now with regard to your water supply whether the grid goes down?
No. No, it would make no difference to me now if the grid went down.
Interesting thought, huh? You would care because of the pain and consternation it had caused the rest of the families out there in the country.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're a caring person. But for your family...
It would make no... I wouldn't even know what happened.
You would literally be carefree. This is called personal liberty. It's called agency. It's called what we're here for.
But I realize, Steve, that I have not an unusual situation. A lot of people with wells in this country. But a fairly rare situation. The majority, I mean, after all, they're listening to us in New York City and Seattle and L.A. and Chicago and... in places where most people don't have water wells. And so let's back up a little bit and let's talk about Y2K. I've had Gary North on. I've had it Jordan on. I've had a variety of experts on Y2K. Some say it'll be 8 or 10 on a scale of 10. It'll be horrible. And there could be months or even in worst case, we could never quite recover from Y2K. That's worst case. And then others, of course, say it's going to be nothing. Everybody's going to be laughing because not a thing is going to happen. Y2K is a total blown-up brouhaha nothing.
Okay,
where do you come in on that scale?
You know what? I don't know. And I really prefer not to care. Now, I know that sounds goofy, but think about it. You've talked to all of these people, many of whom I know you respect, and they're on both sides of the fence. Who's right?
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know. And I don't think they know. Nobody can know.
Well, I mean, there are certain facts. Like Gary North, for example, come on and say, look, there are hundreds of thousands of embedded chips in power companies' switching equipment. That's a fact. And that's not going to change. They don't know where they are, and they're going to find out January 1st.
And that's true. And I believe personally that we are going to have some very, very serious difficulties. But the point is, what I want to do with my family, and what I'm almost on a vendetta with regard to what's going on with the downplay of Y2K about, is I want to be in the same situation with my family that you are with your water, where I can sit back and say, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. I figure there's a pony in there someplace. There's going to be a problem there someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably going to be severe. At least I know a lot of the people that are coming up with the statistics. Jim Lord, I talk to fairly regularly with regard to what's going on. I don't know if you know Jim.
No, who is Jim?
Jim has the Y2K newsletter and
okay.
He's done some publishing, and he speaks quite regularly around the countryside and is very respected in terms of his understanding of what's going on with the grid and the Y2K difficulty.
And what is his current take?
His current take is that we're going to have some serious financial difficulties in July,
mm-hmm.
and that the grid is going to be a factor and a concern. But I think from families that call me, no one really has a feel. Most of the people that call and talk about putting in reserves are saying, Steve, I don't know what's going to happen, but just in case,
mm-hmm.
I'll feel a lot more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, let's go back and let me summarize real quickly. You asked me about the end times, and this fits in here.
Okay.
I didn't finish what I would do and what I have done. What I would do is I would go to all the sources. I'd look at the book of Revelation. It says, and there's going to be a serious famine, and the oceans are going to flip themselves out of their bonds. Ed Dames has seen some of those things, and we've got Gordon Michael Scadian that gives us some cooperation with regard to his theories.
Lori Toy, a raft of others, Native Americans, you
yeah.
name them. I've talked to them. Yeah.
We've got stuff coming out of our ears. So what I've got is one of Gordon's maps up on my wall, and I've got myself a little place up in Idaho, and I believe the famine thing. Famines are going to occur. They occur regularly on a cyclical basis. And so I've got a food reserve, as you can probably imagine, and I'm seeking to provide that same stability that you just provided for you and your sweetheart that says, okay, if this stuff happens, then I am prepared as far as I can go,
mm-hmm.
so that I can be unconcerned. I can be literally carefree.
Well, there's a little caveat there. I don't know about carefree. If it got that bad, Steve, there's a lot of darker sides of this that you would have to talk about before you could talk about carefree.
Oh, yeah. I would care about myself getting into a spiritual level such that I could be one of the ones that was accepted. But the bottom line is, I can be carefree if I do all that I can do. You mentioned the fact that everybody can't have a well. That's right.
Well, I didn't even mean that. I meant if the power went out, if the power simply went out and stayed out for 2 or 3 weeks or a month,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't be a carefree time, even though I've got the ability to have all the water I want.
That's true.
Unfortunately, there would be social considerations that would make it far from carefree.
Absolutely.
And I'm still working on that one in my mind.
And to say totally carefree is not what I'm intending. What I'm trying to say is that, take the people, you know that I'm working with the refugee situation in Kosovo.
I know you are, yes.
We're moving to ship a tremendous amount of food over there.
You mean that place where we're dropping bombs for peace?
Yeah, I know, and there wasn't a serious refugee problem until the bombs started to drop. You got to ask yourself where did this go, but you see the problem is Art, that a child that goes to bed crying because they're hungry, or a mother that needs a little bit of food to keep her health up so that she can provide the milk through her breast to her baby,
sure.
really doesn't give a hoot what dictator or what bomber wants to fly overhead. They've got to survive.
I know,
but you see. What would have happened, you see, we've got the book of Revelations we've had around for years, and people can prepare themselves so that they never have to be forced, unless by other means, to take the mark, if they're concerned about the mark of the beast. One of the most effective ways that countries that have been taken over have been forced into systems is by the control of food and starvation. So if people are prepared that way, you prepare as much as you can for potential circumstances.
Have
if
you
they don't occur, then you're just a bit ahead of the game.
That's right. Have you ever, do you recall a time when our country, in either independently or in concert with others, attacked a sovereign nation in a conflict that had not spilled across to any other border, and we simply decided to attack a sovereign nation? I think I said to you on the phone the other day, and I've said to my audience, I consider this to be the first big step for the new world order.
Yeah. Well, you look at the Gulf War, and it was the first time that American troops had been committed by other than American leadership.
That's true. But at least in that case, there had been an invasion of Kuwait.
That's true.
Borders had been crossed.
There was a certain rationale there.
Yes, yes. And there is even a certain rationale, obviously, with respect to what's going on in Yugoslavia, but not to follow the course of action that we're following now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I understand.
Milosevic is no sweetheart, that's for sure.
That's true.
But I don't know. I think we're competing for the number of dead that we're creating. Our bombs, his, whatever he's doing over there.
You know, I've got a theory, Art, about liberal versus conservative. Conservative says, where your nose begins, mine ends. The conservative believes in the common law. The liberals, the liberal viewpoint is to legislate and control and manipulate, and they view the entire universe from a judgmental position, and they, of course, are the ones who know better than anyone else how they should live their lives.
Well, do you equate liberals with Democrats generally and conservatives with Republicans generally?
I would like to, Art. The only problem is that right now I think we've got a bunch of Republicrats.
So do I.
That are very strongly toward the liberal socialist big government versus small people, and I like big people versus small government.
I think there is virtually no difference in the way they govern. They talk the talk around election time, but there's no difference once they get into office. They govern the same way.
But you
I gave up on them. I'm a libertarian.
Well, you've got to realize that in terms of conservative, I could very easily be referred to as slightly to the right of Attila the Hun. I'm into this liberty thing, and I really want to get back to this Kosovo as an example of what should be being done with Y2K in our country. If you don't mind me taking off on this, and I'll make it brief. If the families over there that are being foisted out of their own country had been counseled or warned 2 years ago and said, listen, we don't know if this is going to happen, but it could. So what you might want to do is think in terms of the fact that you might have to pick up in the middle of the night and get out of Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do? How would you go about it? Would those families be in the dire straits that they are right now? You can say that they're only being allowed to take the clothes on their back. But if they'd have known 2 years ahead of time that something like this could happen,
of
that
course.
You could literally have almost a religious war going on.
Sure.
Some of the wealthier ones, and the contacts that I have with the relief group say that some of the first people came out were not your down and out families that were lost. They drove out in their Mercedes Benz,
mm-hmm.
but they could take only what they could drag in their car. But some of those families would have maybe looked ahead and crossed the border, found a little place to stash some food so they wouldn't be desolate. And if you told me, and I'm taking this to a third party rather than going to our situation, because a lot of times if you make people own a situation, they go into denial. But if we can take these people over there and say, hey, if someone was warning them, if they were being counseled, look, it might not happen, but it could, so act accordingly. Because if it does, you're on your own.
Or if they had simply done a basic preparations for whatever might come, they'd have been in a better position.
Absolutely. They'd have had
sure.
some tents in the back of their Mercedes.
Yeah.
Or they'd have, on their tractors, they'd have had a grab pack that they could throw on that tractor and on the hay rack that they were riding out on that could sustain them for 4 or 5 days of food
and a tent to crawl into if it started raining, and they wouldn't die of thermal problems.
Do Mercedes tents have little symbols on them?
I think so. I think so. And I don't want you to get carried away with that example, but I was really surprised to hear that, you know, you imagine refugees as being people that are basically down and out and have nothing. The wealthier families are being thrown out of their country just as well as the as the middle class and poor people.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's take it over to what's going on in our country right now.
Sure.
This Y2K thing, the One World Government, the Earth changes, the Book of Revelations, all of this has kind of been adjusted in our thinking, and the big juggernaut that we're dealing with is Y2K. Now, we've seen a situation, you mentioned on one of your ads that someone has the Bennett Report available. I would love to see also, after that report that says, man, this is going to go down bad, that they would also have where he backpedaled and said, oh, it's going to be a bump in the road.
Yeah, now tell me a little more about this. In other words, the original Bennett Report, which one of my sponsors was sending out, really was quite a large volume of what is going to happen. It was pretty dark.
Yeah, I've got it sitting right here in front of me, and it goes through statistically. And you see, one of the things that they point out in the report that the response from their mailers out to the various utility companies and various organizations was very, very small. And so, you know, I was when I was in graduate school, I was taught a concept with regards to statistics. You give me any fact that you want to prove, and I can back it up statistically. Because numbers don't lie, but liars sure can figure.
Mm.
But and I'm not saying that there's any lying in there, but I'm just saying that there's a very, very questionable skew with regard to the small response that they got, which would indicate, in my opinion, that the people that were verging on doing something about it are the ones that were proud to respond, and those that were doing nothing kind of shut up and sat back in the corner.
Can you give us a synopsis of what was in the original Bennett Report?
It basically went through the utilities and the various things that everybody has heard about and pointed out that things were shaky and of concern. And Mr. Bennett came on TV. He was broadcast here in Utah because that's where he's from. And on several instances, painting a very stern picture of concern that said, this thing is going down badly, and it doesn't have, as we can see, an adequate chance of being resolved before we run into the problem.
Exactly what a lot of my guests have said. In fact, they were saying 6 months, 8 months ago, it's already way too late.
Now, let's talk about what's happened here. You know from our conversations that the first 2-3 months of the year, families were really rocking and rolling. They were getting themselves set up. They were putting in food reserves. They were putting away a little bit of cash.
Yep.
They were
getting
out
of debt.
They were stopping the increase of debt and starting to back off the debt. And they were becoming self-sufficient. They were literally taking back their liberty.
All right, and then something happened, and that's where we're going to pause, everybody, because we're at the top of the hour.
It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the times to get better.
I wouldn't bank on it, though. We're going to tell you what's happened since those first couple of months of the year and why we think it happened. Steve Shank is my guest. I'm Art Bell.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13, 1999.
Steve Shank is my guest. He'll be back momentarily. A couple of items with respect to Ed Dames. He was mentioned a little while ago. Ed called me about 10 minutes before airtime and said, "Hey, Art." He actually said more than this. He said, "Watch Rocky Flats in Colorado." He really did say more than that, but I'm not at liberty for obvious reasons to give you the rest of it. And he also is mentioned in a fax that just came in. "Hey, Art, please share this story with Steve Shank with regard to the end times of the bees. If your listeners like to garden, or they have a garden, or better yet, like to eat fruit and vegetables, they might be interested in this story. How stupid can I be? Ever since Ed Dames talked about the bees being blinded by our sun on your show almost 2 years ago, I've noticed that they aren't around much anymore. Last summer, a lot of old-timers up here in New Hampshire were complaining about a lack of bees and bad crops." That's the whole home, by the way, of Gordon Michael Scallion, too. "Especially the squash, cucumbers, and apples. They've never seen it like that before. And they blamed it on the heavy rains in the spring of last year. But this year, we've had plenty of dry spring. And guess what? No bees. And my cherry trees are full of blossoms. And there are no bees to pollinate them. So that leaves me to try to pollinate them myself with an artist's paintbrush, which I did this last Sunday. On the same day, I saw on the news that an 18-wheeler flatbed turned on its side in Falmouth, Maine, spilling part of its cargo, which, believe it or not, were bees. To be precise, 20 million bees escaped, and they didn't say how many more were actually on that load. It was even on CNN headline news. The bees are shipped to Maine to help pollinate the apple orchards and blueberry crops, according to the news. But you've got to wonder, this is one truck that turned over. How many trucks got through? And why are we having to import bees? I mean, that's really something worth a little thought. Steve Shank will be right back. Back now to Steve Shank, and Steve, welcome back. Where do we want to go from here? I think Y2K, let's stay with that, and let's stay with the Bennett Report. Now, the Bennett Report was pretty damn serious. I mean, it really shook up a lot of people and got a lot of action going at the beginning of the year, and people really began to pay attention and said, "Oh, yeah, well, maybe there really is something that's going to happen." And they began to prepare. We saw signs of it everywhere. And then all of a sudden, there was a change.
Yeah, and Bennett came out and basically said it was going to be a bump in the road. And then he was questioned after that. And he said, "Well, I didn't say how big a bump." The other thing that happened was that where the media before was going strongly with all of the things that were being done to prepare and the concern that it wouldn't be accomplished, and we're basically fanning the concern and the realization that there was a serious issue here that the population needed to address.
Actually, Steve, this is almost worth discussion. Like somebody threw a switch, news of Y2K began January 1st of this year. I mean, just like somebody threw a switch, and all of a sudden it was everywhere.
Absolutely.
How does that happen in the media? You have any thoughts on that?
Yep. I think that they lit a backfire. Are you familiar with the concept of lighting backfires of the forest fire?
Of course.
Okay. Think about it this way. If with your program and with the various voices screaming, something had to be done, there was a deep concern here about Y2K. At first, there were short news blasts that came out and said, things will be fine, it'll be cool. But But ultimately, they were drug kicking and screaming backwards through the knot hole of public opinion that said, what's going on? They had to address it. Now, if you and I were smart and we were running the show, we would, instead of resisting at that point, we would all of a sudden turn around and go with the flow. And I think that the switch was flipped at the beginning of the year. And then you had all of this information and all of the pump that came through the media that was coming from the authorities as such. And that gave them credibility so that the population was saying, golly, they're on the bandwagon. They're recognizing this. They're saying there's something serious. I guess we better do something because mm-hmm. they say that it could be of concern. Now, let's look at, I know that these folks are well-intended that run our government, and they are basically on our side, and they're trying to take care of us. If they understood human nature and what went on in places like Kosovo and this type of thing, would it make sense to you, Art, that they would continue to pass on information? Hey, it could get rough. Any of you guys that can take care of yourself, do it, because we can't take care of everybody, and a bunch of people are going to be taken care of. Now, we don't know for sure that it's going to go down badly. We're doing everything we can to mop up and damage control, but we may not be able to handle it. So be aware, go ahead, and those of you that can, prepare as much as you can do for yourselves,
mm-hmm.
because we may not be able to handle it. Now, if nothing happened, would anybody be mad at them?
Yes, because I know, I know you expected the other answer, but the answer would be yes.
Yeah.
They would be. That's the kind of nation we have today. I bought all this stuff for nothing. What the hell's the matter with you people?
Oh, I understand that. I hear that from some of the LDS families that have been preparing for years, and they're saying, "Well, nothing's happened yet. Should we keep on preparing?"
Yeah.
Well, maybe not, but at least they would have been given the opportunity to prepare, and a lot of people were. Now, let's take a look at a farmer that goes out into the field and he harvests his hay. In anticipation of a serious winter, he puts in a lot of hay for his cattle.
Right.
Okay. At the end of the winter, it turns out that it wasn't severe at all. In fact, he could almost graze all year long.
Right.
Now, was he stupid for putting in the hay?
No.
Okay. Now, there's a concern that we might panic. I know that they're printing up tremendous amounts of cash because of a concern for a run on the banks.
I know.
Now, if that's the case, that we would panic, who panics? Someone that has a little bit of cash, has food? If things get shut down, or if there's a temporary hiccup or a bump in the road, those aren't the people that panic. The people that panic are the people that were caught unawares.
Well, here's another possible angle. There are two things coming that they're probably trying to prevent. One is producing a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's true.
Bank runs, that sort of thing. I'm not going to tiptoe around this. Just about everybody knows that probably in the, September, October area, people are going to begin to think, oh, gee, I better have a little cash, and they're going to go to the bank. And the banks are scared to death of this. I know because I've talked to my banker, and any banker will tell you they're scared of it.
Well, they have to be because there are only a few dollars for every $250 on deposit.
I realize that. So it may well be that Senator Bennett had a little pressure put on him to contribute to the cause of not making this a self-fulfilling prophecy. And hence you see the cover letter. That's one possibility. Is it not?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. On the other hand, it seems to me that this Y2K thing was a beautiful opportunity to encourage a large nucleus of families in this country to become stable and free, just like you are with the preparations that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And these people that call and talk to me are not the wild-eyed radicals that are half a bubble off with one oar in the water, a brick shy of a load, this type of thing.
Yes.
They are quietly saying, I feel like there could be a concern. I don't know. But if I stabilize my family's economy and get myself to where I am free and have liberty, just like you have with your preparations, then if nothing happens, what will the harm be? I'll have a little bit of a savings. I'll have a reserve of food. I'll be less obligated and bound by debt. And I will be more secure than I was before for having done this. What would be the matter with having a nucleus of families in this country that were physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually stable in the event that something did happen? Fine. But these are just good principles to live by, for pity's sake. And here we've had an opportunity. I look at the Y2K thing as actually a tremendous opportunity for families to stop dead in their tracks and say, wait a minute, we have given away our liberty. We are bound in debt. We cannot take a day off from work because if we did, the treadmill that we've set up of our economic travel is at a speed that's slightly faster than what we can run.
Right.
And if we took a day off from work, or if a boss that was oppressive got a little bit too much so, could we quit our job and have the resources to maintain ourselves for whatever time it would take to find a better position? No.
I tell you that I believe 90% plus of the people in this country are in that position, Steve.
That's right. And do you realize that this Y2K thing is an opportunity for those families to stop and say, wait a minute, because of their concern for something that could possibly happen, if they were being told, look, guys, if this thing goes down, and we don't know that it does, if this goes down, try and get yourself prepared so that you have a little something to eat, you have a little bit of cash if you need it, you've got some place to stay, and you don't have a lot of heavy bondage to the extent that you can. Because we can't take care of all of you if it does go down. If it doesn't go down, what'll you have? You'll have a little bit of cash if you ever need it. You don't have to get a loan to buy a new tire for your silly truck. You know? And if you are in a...
If it really got bad, Steve, let's really take worst case for a second.
Okay.
For a while, I guess that cash would be king, right? Credit cards would be kafui. Nobody'd be taking those.
Right.
Because the little machines wouldn't be working, so they couldn't take them. So cash would certainly be king, but that would only be for a while. If the crisis continued, then the currency would be food and guns. And if the crisis continued past that, the only currency would be food.
That's true.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. But I would say that cash doesn't necessarily even have to be king. Let me put it this way. Right now, I happen to know what your food situation is.
Right. Yes, you do.
So if you and your sweetheart woke up one morning and things had crashed, you would have water.
Yep.
So you wouldn't be concerned with that.
I'd have food.
You would have food.
I've got alternative energy. I'd even have cooling. I live near Death Valley. It gets hot here in the summer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And given that fact, what would you need cash for?
All the things that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, that's true.
In other words, I would think it prudent to have some limited amount of cash on hand so that you could go out and bargain in the world for whatever. There's always something you don't think of.
Toss in some junk silver.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. A little bit of gold.
Barter.
A little bit of cash.
Barter material.
That's right.
Yeah.
But realistically, you know, you thought for a minute, most people, if things were shut down right today, they would need cash immediately.
Oh, yes.
For food.
And that's exactly how they would not be able to get it immediately.
Exactly. And you see, the interesting thing about a reserve with food, and I don't want to whip this thing to death because, you know, I work with food. But the reason I work with food, Art, is it's the easiest, the cheapest, the most effective reserve that a family could put in. If a family has a food reserve of, say, 6 months, that means that if they get in trouble with their house payment, the present cost of food per month, let's say that they're spending $400 a month on food, all of a sudden, that $400, they go to their reserve, that $400 can be applied to the house payment that they're short on.
Correct.
That food reserve literally backs up every other economic factor in the family with a reserve that is greater than cash. For example, if you take a food reserve and you put it next to a cash reserve,
right?
Okay, you have a straight across dollar value in the cash reserve. Also, if that food is in your home, you have total control of it. You might not be able to get to the cash if it's in a savings account, or if, for example, you have a 3 month or 6 month supply of food in, if that family takes what they would spend on groceries, that means that if they're spending $400 on groceries, they have $400 in cash to work with. It probably only took $200 to put in the food that covers that $400 in grocery cost.
Right.
Because, as you know from our discussions, when we put these shipments together, the food is cheaper than anything else that they can do for storable or in groceries. And so they literally, by taking a dollar and putting it into a food reserve, have multiplied the value of that reserve, and it covers everything that they need because they don't spend money on groceries and they take it and spend it where they need it.
Oh, no, it makes all the sense in the world to me.
Absolutely. But let's get back to the backfire thing.
Yeah, and what's happened? In other words, do you believe they've lit this backfire to prevent self-fulfilling prophecy, or they now know that it's absolutely inevitable and they just don't want to panic?
I think, and this again is my opinion, and you know what those are worth, I think that the backfire has been lit to avoid the panic, to allow the banking system a breather so that when the run comes, it can be handled. I don't think they're ready to handle it yet. Now, this is a very negative view. Let's take a more positive view and just say that in their attempt to protect us from ourselves, which most liberal forms of government have a tendency to do, and I don't want to discuss that much further, but anyway, to protect us from ourselves, they, out of great concern, have gone along with this, but they feel that they need to dampen this down so that after maintaining their credibility of recognizing it and saying it's a problem, then what they're doing is using that credibility and saying, it's fixed. And where they go in and take some of the critical elements that were considered crucial areas of concern, they have reduced the list by those areas that will not be taken care of and left only those which will, and we now have a high percentage of resolve on the problem.
Bottom line is, though, you don't believe it's fixed, do you?
Nope.
Neither do I. Hold on, Steve. Stay right there. It's going to be an interesting year. All bets off in 99. Remember, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13th, 1999. Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the best talk radio in the nighttime. No brag, just facts. We're the best. And it's because all of you, and I want you to know I appreciate it. back now to Steve Shank. And, Steve, I've got a story here that says, look, if you're planning to stay up on New Year's Eve 99 in the hope that you might witness massive chaos at 12:01, don't waste your time. Only 8% of system failures will occur during the actual rollover. The remaining 92% spread out over 99, 2000, and 2001. Now, 8%...
Makes a lot of sense, Art.
Well, it does, but 8%, that's still pretty good. I plan to be on the air that night just to see what happens.
Sure. I think it'll be exciting and interesting. By the way, as far as sayings, I've got one for you too here.
Oh, do you?
Necessity is the mother of invention.
My mama told me that one.
Yeah.
I've heard that one.
But terror is the father of true inspiration.
Now, that I hadn't heard. That's good. So
anyway, back to it.
Yeah, they're kind of soft peddling the terror part of it, the possibility that the power could go out and stay out, the possibility you might not have water and all the rest of it.
I've been a bit scattered here, and I apologize for that. Let me just kind of briefly go through how I perceive this.
Please.
I think that what happened was that they saw that they couldn't hold back the floodwaters, and so they rode with the tide and, in fact, increased it. This is a good way to deal with a confrontation. Over-respond, or at least respond to the point where people feel that you're with them.
Mm-hmm.
At that instant, I think... If they had not had their agenda well in mind of trying to prevent the panic, they could have been able to see that this was not creating a panic. It was allowing a massive flood to come down the stream. And you know what they do when a flood's coming? They open the gates on the dam.
That's right.
To allow it to go through. If they would have allowed it to continue to go through and encouraged the people to prepare and encouraged the people to realize that there might be nothing happening, but in case there is, be wise and prepare the best you can. Bloom where you're planted, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the problem is that I think that they were still concerned that the flood was happening. So they, using their credibility that they'd established by going along with the flood, then said, okay, everything is fine, all is well in Zion, as it were. And a lot of people went back to sleep. The problem with the folks that have gone back to sleep, Art, is that it took a jolt for them to come awake to begin with. They got on the wagon, and then when they have fallen back off again, it will take a more severe jolt, a very severe jolt, to get them awake again.
And by then it'll be too late.
That's right. I'm afraid that the jolt that it will take will be so severe that it will be too late for them to respond. There will either be not enough food. You see, if you dam this flood up, which is what's been done, what's happened, not necessarily in the form of public opinion.
Well, we live in a demand and supply world. So
absolutely.
Obviously, for example, your company or any other company like yours, is if it's getting a very strong demand, it's going to ensure or try to ensure a sufficient supply to meet that. If the demand drops, the supply drops, and if the demand should suddenly sharply rise,
guess what?
Supply won't be there.
There's nothing. And you see, as a result of that flood that was coming down the riverbed, at one point in time, most of the suppliers out there, you and I talked, and I think you announced on your show that we didn't back order. Most of the suppliers were dealing with 6 and 8 months back ordering.
I know.
And that was not the big flood. Now, we've cut it off. We've dammed this thing up. At the point where families realize that they're going to have food and it literally breaks through the dam, there isn't a supplier in this country that's going to be able to react, except maybe our operator, the people that we order from, because we're still anticipating that this thing is going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
But be that as it may, what I'm really most exasperated about is not the drop in the preparation.
It's the betrayal of the trust of the families. The problem that we've got is that the leadership doesn't have any faith in us. We have, the people that are calling me, Art, are magnificent, intelligent, capable Americans. These people care about their family. They're the ones that go to work every day and supply the backbone for this operation that we call America.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is that in all the wisdom of the liberal mentality that says we're too stupid to come out of the rain, they have concluded for us that we will not handle the need to prepare correctly, and therefore they need to prevent us from panicking. Well, I'll tell you what, if that flood were allowed to take its course, if they'd open up the floodgates and say, go ahead, prepare, the banks wouldn't have a run on them because people already had started taking out little bits here, little bits there. But as soon as there's the realization that this thing is going down, you'll have everybody and his brother's cousin standing on the doorstep of their bank the first thing on that Monday morning when they realize it, and you will have a run on the bank.
I know.
If they would allow it to come out as people, the people's minds are changing slowly. We had an increase in calls as you started announcing. And more people, their relatives, their friends would say, oh, that makes some sense. And old Arch talking about it, so it must be all right. And I know Steve Shank's a bum, but at least his food is good, you know, that type of thing.
You've been doing this for 18 years, huh?
Yep.
18 years, that's a long time.
Yep.
Here's
and
something.
So if that flood could come down and the people, as they got their food in, then they thought, well, we better get a little cash in. You'd have a few thousand people going down and taking out a couple hundred dollars and putting it into their reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be an influx, but you wouldn't have had a run. Now these knuckleheads have set it up where they've got this thing dammed up and they've got it stopped and they've got it toned down. Everybody's gone back to sleep.
I know.
Well, when we do have that impact, whatever it is, whether it's the banks, the economy, the stock market, any number of things, when we do have it, it'll be a situation where they'll have to have trained troops to handle civil unrest, because those people that have been caught short, just like those folks that are coming across the border in Kosovo, if somebody would have warned them and had them given them a chance, nowhere near the number would have been panicked and out in the street.
Sure.
If you want to have blood running in the streets, and if you want to have riots and things like that, you just hold this flood back until something hits that shakes everybody loose and they realize, my gosh, it's real, and then you watch what's going
to
happen.
This brings me, I think, to the hardest question that I can ask, and I can't even answer it myself, so I don't necessarily expect an answer from you. But
now you got to realize I'm pretty arrogant, Art. I think I know most answers.
Okay, that's fine. You're in the food storage business. I would conclude without question that you have stored your own food.
You bet.
Fine. Let's say the worst happens. There's panic. There's chaos, anarchy, people out with guns and what have you, trying to take what they have to have. I mean, people have to have food. So the store shelves are going to last about 2 days. I've seen that in a hurricane.
That's true.
Then the food's gone. So
right.
Steve Shank has food.
Right.
And
now
somebody,
you've told the whole world that Steve Shank has food.
Well, the whole world already knew it. So somebody's going to try and come and take away Steve Shank's food. And, the bottom line is, would you shoot somebody, if you had to, who was coming to take your food?
Nope.
You answered that quite readily. I can't answer it.
You've got to realize, Art, that I've had this question posed to me a gazillion times.
Well, let me hear how you worked it through.
Well, let me put it this way. One time when all six kids were home, we were sitting out having a family home evening on a Monday night on a trampoline out in the middle of our yard in the middle of June, and we discussed this very thing. And we concluded that if somebody came to the door and was threatening my family
and was going to take my food at gunpoint, I'd shoot them. If they came to my door hungry and needing food, I'd feed them. But things have changed, Art. You see, in countries where people starve, you have your riots and things like that when the first upheaval starts. But
That's
when
right.
people get into the starvation mode, a lot of times they just literally sit down and get very lethargic. But I think that what we're dealing with here is a very serious moral issue. And I've had a lot of families. You know,
yes,
I was talking about the wonderful people out there. I had one family out of Oregon that called in and ordered a phenomenal amount of food. They've got 10 members in their family. They're the husband and the wife, and they've got 8 kids. And about 2 months later, they called in and said, you know, a lot of our friends and relatives think that we're, you know, one taco short of a blue plate special for getting prepared, and so they're not doing anything.
Right.
So we're going to put in some more. That family, over the period of time, ordered 2 additional times, and they have sitting in their reserve about 3 or 4 years of storable food because they know that they're going to feed people. Art, this is not a matter of us versus them. This is a matter of us. We as a country, we as a people, are facing conditions that have never been faced in the history of mankind. We've got the end times possible. We've got earth changes and weather conditions. We've got the political structuring that many refer to, or that many look to the scriptures as saying this is occurring. We've got a Y2K situation that could, any one of these.
I know.
Could be totally. So instead of sitting around saying, okay, there are going to be all these hungry people out here, we don't look at it that way. The objective that we've got, and this is why I've said it 3 or 4 times already, I'm so aggravated at the way this Y2K thing has been handled by downplaying it. We have an opportunity to have this whole nation as a people pulled together against a common foe, technological impact. I had a little gal call me that was just absolutely a sweetheart. She was an older lady. She was a mature lady. And she said, you know, Steve, I believe in the rapture. And I'm not too sure whether I'm pre, mid, or post-trib rapturist. And I'm relatively convinced that I'll be taken. But, you know, I'm going to put in a 2-year supply of food anyway. Because if it comes and I have to live through part of this tribulation, I'll need the food. And I'm going to feed some other people too. But you know, if I'm fortunate enough to be one of those that are taken, there will be something here for those who remain. This is a Christian attitude, Art. And this is the attitude that I have family after family after family calling me and expressing. And
okay,
but I
want to make the question hard for you, though, Steve.
Huh?
I want to make the question hard for you. You might feed a few people with your reserves without endangering your own family's existence. But at some point, Steve, you would have to say no to somebody to at least ensure even a short-term continued supply of food for your family. That's the crunch point.
That's true. I wouldn't shoot them.
I'm afraid
I just wouldn't shoot them. If they were hungry and they came to me, I'd say I don't have anything to share. But I'd still share some of it, probably. And then we'd get into the situation of the widow's mite and, you know, some of the things that have occurred. If you have to get into the faith end of things then at that point, Art.
Yeah, I guess so. I've struggled with that question myself, and I'm not a person of great faith, Steve, I'll be honest with you. But there's a really deep moral question, and I'm not sure that I could shoot somebody for food. I don't know that for sure. But I don't think I could.
I can tell you right now, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You wouldn't.
I don't think you can know that until that moment comes.
I
Well, maybe not. Maybe not.
It's like you can't know if your life is an immediate threat. You cannot know what you would do until you're faced with that.
You're absolutely right. But you know what, Art? I'm willing to bet on you. And I would want you to bet on me. And the thing that gets to me is that these guys that are pulling this stunt by downplaying the concern aren't willing to bet on you and bet on me and bet on the other people.
I hear that.
That they will treat this wisely. And you know, what would happen if some idiot politician just really took a flyer and decided that, you know, we're concerned about a run on the banks. And they came out and said, hey, folks, the banking system could be in real trouble if you ran, you know. So hang loose and work with us. Now, I know what you might say, Art. In our population with the mentality that we have, the me first, the welfare mentality, the liberal take care of me approach, might not work. But I tell you what, by what's going on here, the downplaying of it, putting everybody to sleep, not giving people a chance to say, I want to take back my liberty, mm-hmm. I don't want to be dependent on sucking on the nipple of society.
But they've got to privately be making assessments based on the strategy that we see them using right now. So they must have assessments of what's going to occur.
Yeah. Based on the typical viewpoint that a paternalistic society that's based on liberal socialism would view it. You guys are going to be stupid. We are smarter than you. Therefore, we will decide whether you should be motivated to prepare for yourself. And you see, the thing that's being missed is that if they encourage those families to prepare, if they encourage those families to have a little reserve to become financially stable, do you realize that if they would have let this flood continue, enough families would have had a little savings, a little food reserve, a little less debt, to the point where this country could possibly not any longer be bankrupt?
I know, but we have this economic boom, so-called, going on right now at this very moment, and I think that also influenced it. Steve, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Listen, when we come back, we're going to open the lines for Steve Shank, and I'm going to let you ask him whatever you would like. We're talking about Y2K and things related. Preparation. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Welcome to the program, those of you who join at this hour. Anything is possible tonight, anything at all. Who knows? But then again, that's kind of the way I like it. Check this out. It looks as though there has just been an earthquake felt in the Los Angeles area within about the last 15 or 16 minutes. I'm getting multiple reports by fax and email, but here's one from Palm Springs. Art, a biggie. At about 12:55 a.m. Pacific time or so, it felt like at least a five-pointer, and it was a really long one to hold on. So there apparently has been an earthquake in Southern California of moderate size. At this point, of course, we don't really know where it was centered, but if these various faxes that I'm getting mean anything, then I would think that it was probably in the area of Palm Springs, but that's just a pure guess. Steve, welcome back.
Hello.
So there was just, we had an earthquake in Kansas City, of all places, earlier today, and now one in the L.A. area.
Things are getting really goofy, Eric.
A virus, in reality. Listen, I'm going to read you a tough fax, and we can both try and answer this, all right?
Okay.
It's from Sean in St. Petersburg, Florida. He says, so why do both of you think the problem isn't fixed? I'll tell you why. Because both of you, along with some others, like Gary North, want to believe it isn't fixed and can't be fixed because it serves your purpose. Art, you are the perfect example. You are pimping Y2K. You wouldn't believe the problem isn't as bad as you make it out to be if the evidence was sitting right in front of you. Why? Because you want to be able to predict the worst. It keeps your sponsors peddling their Y2K disaster supplies on your show. You have the perfect relationship with your sponsors. You and your guests hype the Y2K issue. Your sponsors just happen to have the cure. You should be ashamed of the way you're presenting the topic. Well, you know, he's certainly right about that.
Yeah.
We do have sponsors that are presenting cures like yourself for this problem. I honestly do believe that it is a very serious problem, continues to be a very serious problem. I wouldn't lie to my audience about that. I'm taking steps myself, so I don't think I'm pimping it. I think that I'm trying to err on the side of caution. And if it doesn't happen, then what harm? People are prepared. What harm? The weather is worsening. So many things are going wrong that I just don't feel that's honest. But I read it anyway. How would you respond?
Well, I would say very simply that he can totally ignore what you say and what I say. Mm-hmm. Any of your sponsors are supplying. He obviously doesn't feel that he needs them. And so since we are in a country where, and we've been talking tonight about families taking back their liberty, he has the liberty, fortunately, to choose not to pay any attention to our foolishness. Now, I've got some other families that think we're right in line. And if you were to call any one of those folks and say, I've got a family out in Lufkin, Texas, absolutely delightful people, if you'd call up that couple and say, Johnny, if Steve Shank is a wild-eyed nut that's really promoting this Y2K thing, you put a bunch of money into some storable foods, how are you going to feel about Steve Shank when this thing doesn't go down? I'll guarantee you, just as sure as I'm sitting here looking ugly, Art, that Johnny will come back and say, you know, Steve Shank is a bit of a bum, but I am really happy that I am in a situation now where I have a reserve. I'm in better financial shape. I'm in better emotional shape. My family is stable and secure, and I feel wonderful.
All right. Another hard question for you, Steve. You sell long-term storable food. Not everybody can afford that.
That's true.
You're talking to people all over this country right now, small towns, big towns, farms, the biggest cities. To the people that can't afford what you sell, what are prudent steps?
Well, let me clarify one thing. I'm a little bit different of a my function is a little bit different, Art. I don't perceive myself as selling as much as I do as ordering on behalf of the families.
Sure, okay.
I would rather be in that spot.
All right.
What we have done just recently, you've got to realize that a lot of the folks that have been calling in so far are very comfortable with a whole year's supply.
Sure.
But there are also some folks that either can't afford or are on the fringe of saying, you know, this thing could go, it could not go. I'd feel better if I had something, and it does make sense, Y2K or not, to have a little reserve of food. So what we've come out with, and I'll be writing some script for you and getting it to you Monday, we've got what we call a short pack, and that's going to enable people to get a small amount just in case or as a reserve. It has nothing to do with Y2K.
Okay.
But there's one thing that I really want to clarify. Because of the positioning, ordering on behalf of rather than marketing specifically, I order from several suppliers.
Right.
And we're able to, you've mentioned earlier that it's the Cadillac, and I know what you're trying to say. I don't want people to have the impression that we're talking about Cadillac in terms of expensive. We literally, by doing it the way we do, are able to get the cheapest possible reserves out there, the families that they can possibly do. Now, if they don't want to order through your suggestions, through JMS, I would encourage families to go out and get anything they can get, you know, do something.
What is reasonable to store? Grains, are they reasonable? What else can you store that you could just go buy?
You really need to put in food that's in line with what you're used to eating right now. If presently you're eating a high percentage of grain in your diet, it's perfectly fine to store grain. But there's a real problem if you have too high a percentage of grain in your diet. You can get something called high-grade dysentery and actually head towards scurvy because it doesn't have the balance. And the human digestive system has a hard time with a high percentage of grains, particularly now that we have become accustomed to the type of diet we're on.
So you need balance.
You balance, yeah. You look at what you're eating right now, and you try and duplicate it in your reserve.
Canned foods that don't have to be refrigerated, I suppose.
Canned foods are okay. You have to really consider nutritional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that nutritionally you're sound. One of the things that we really encourage people to do, and we foist it upon them any time we can, is put in seeds that are intended to be sprouted. Because when people are living on their reserves, one of the most important things that they can have are fresh greens. And sprouts, you've eaten them at salad bars. They have bean sprouts.
Sure.
They have alfalfa sprouts.
Sure. We grow them here in the desert.
You betcha. What families should do is they should always have some sprouts on hand or sprouting seeds on hand because they can be grown in 2 or 3 days and you've got, you know, if you will put in a cup and a half of sprouts into your diet each day, nutritionally, they will supplement a family's present diet so they'll be much healthier.
I take it you're not a big fan of the Terminator seed technology.
That's the most despicable movie. That's absolutely ridiculous. To think that our government, the Agriculture Department,
I know,
will go into cahoots with a seed producing operation, get a patent on a seed that literally terminates itself.
Yep.
It's the most despicable. It's an atrocity against mankind, for pity's sake.
And Art,
if I ever develop any feelings about that, I'll let you know.
Please, first. Yeah, don't hold back.
I won't hold back.
All right, a lot of people want to talk to you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Steve Shank. Hi. Hello there.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Art. Hello, Steve. Hi. Hi.
Where are you, sir?
I am in Chicago, Illinois.
All right.
Yes. Concerning Y2K, I wanted to get your ideas beyond food and money reserves, what other type of reserves people should be looking out for with the possibility of some hardships coming on with this Y2K problem.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, beyond food and beyond a little bit of cash, there are going to be other needs.
Right. You need to have your house heated.
How about water?
You need to have water.
You're not going to go far at all without water.
Absolutely. You won't go as far as you will without food.
Yeah, that's fact. You can't flush your johns. You can't take a bath. You can't be hygienic. You can't, and you have to drink water.
Absolutely.
To live.
And every family should have a little reserve of water in. Best suggestion is put in about a gallon a day per adult equivalent for a 2-week period.
And you can buy various devices just to store it in. Some people put it in drums. But you want to make sure that anything you store in water is a food-grade plastic so it doesn't off-gas into the water.
You know what I thought would be really good for storing water?
Hmm?
A waterbed.
Yeah, a lot of folks have thought that. Now, what you'd, if you were going to do that, you know that they have you put some little tablets in the waterbed.
Yes.
To prevent it from growing funny things.
Right.
As you sleep.
That's right.
And what you can do is you can either get a good quality water purifier that you would purify the water as it comes out to get those chemicals out. Or you would use it and maybe use a little bit of Clorox bleach, and then you'd have to rotate your water, so you'd have to drain it and then put it back in, drain it, put it back in.
Uh-huh. But a waterbed would store.
It's a good concept.
Yeah, it would store. It's a big bladder. It would store a lot of water.
Yeah.
All right. Wild card line, you're on the air with Steve Shank. Hi.
Good morning. This is Jeff. I'm calling from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Jeff.
First of all, as you just mentioned about the waterbed, don't you have to treat other water or storable water to keep it from coming stagnant, or what's the shelf life without having, you know, regular tap water?
Actually, I think you do, yes.
Yeah.
Don't you, Steve?
Yeah, the simplest thing you can do, you can go down to a health food store and get some little tablets or something, but the simplest thing is if you have a 5-gallon container to put about a tablespoon of Clorox bleach in it.
Okay. You keep referring to keeping on hand a small amount of cash. Could you be a little bit more specific as far as like maybe a percentage of maybe a person's weekly or however often they get paid? Maybe, you know, should they be like taking $50 out each paycheck between now and then? Or
all right, that let's just go on your initial question. That is, the percentage of your weekly or monthly pay, what should you have on hand?
You can figure this out yourself, I feel. It depends on how long you want to be
independent.
If you feel like you would like to be able to handle, say, a 3-month period of time where you could not get to work, you probably wouldn't need gasoline for your car, but if you already have your food reserve in, you aren't going to be spending groceries, then calculate what you would need if you and your family were sitting in your home and you were basically not traveling or not, you know, you were just existing, what you would need to apply. Add about 10% to it. In other words, calculate what you take per week, what you would need in cash per week. Add about 10% to it for what Art's referring to as the things you didn't think of. And then you do it a week at a time. You put that amount of cash back. And
I think it used to be called the fudge factor.
Yeah, yeah. And you just calculate it yourself. And it's the length of time that you want to be able to be independent.
So everybody can answer that for themselves. All right,
yeah.
East of the Rockies, you're on there with Steve Shank. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Wayne. I'm in Lincoln, Rhode Island.
Well, hi there.
How you doing?
All right.
I want to say, first of all, I've been listening to your show while I drive my truck around the country, and I have full confidence in both of you gentlemen's integrity. I just want to make that clear from the get-go.
Very kind
of you.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you.
And I just as far as your guest goes, I agree with just about everything you say, and he really sounds like one of the most level-headed persons I've heard talk on the subject. However, I just have one small criticism, and that is a lot of the things that you point out, you attribute to a so-called liberal agenda. And I have a slight problem with that because I believe that that has a way of maybe fostering division. I think there's enough blame to go around for just about any political persuasion you want to.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And what I was trying to convey, I don't want in any way to be divisive here.
Right,
but
right.
What I was trying to convey is that typically the viewpoint is to not allow those of us who want to take responsibility for our actions to do so. And that tends to be more in the liberal camp. But
don't you think, though, that is is a quote unquote Washington view or Washington version of liberalism. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it probably is.
And Mr. Bell, can I make a quick suggestion, real quick?
Very quickly.
You might want to check out for music an album by Genesis. It's the Genesis Live album. They have a song on there called "Watcher of the Skies."
You got it, my friend. I'll check
it
out.
And I think you'd be interested in the cover too.
Well, I'm all right. I'm certainly a watcher. All right, everybody, hold tight. We'll be back into another half hour with Steve Shank. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 13, 1999.
I'll tell you what, folks, the earthquakes are swarming in Southern California right now. At 56 minutes past midnight and 8 seconds, there was a 3.1 about 5 miles south-southeast of Yucca Valley. Then at 54 minutes past the hour, there was a 5.0, again 5 miles southeast of Yucca Valley, obviously the same one. These varied in depth from a little less than a mile to about 5.5 miles below the earth. And there's been about 20 others, of course, of much smaller magnitude. So it's really swarming in Southern California. Thought I would update you on that. I'm Art Bell, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AM. If you will stay right where you are, we'll be right back with Steve Shank. Well, all right, here's another fact. All right, the government has started to play down the Y2K problems to keep the people from not being prepared with all the food and essentials. Talking to some of the politicians here in San Diego, I will not name names, the objective appears to be to keep the government in control with food lines controlled by the military and other means. If the people are mostly prepared and helping each other, and they realize in the midst of disaster that they don't need the government, then the government loses control and would have to impose force to take that control back. Do you agree with that, Steve? Steve? Where are you, Steve?
I'm here.
You're there.
Yeah, what we're talking about is personal liberty.
Right.
As we take control of our own destiny and are self-sufficient, we have our liberty. To the extent that we have to be dependent on someone else,
right,
we lose our liberty, and this is what the person is saying.
All right. Back to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air with Steve Shank. Hi.
Hello, Art. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, I just called in because I am extremely afraid of what is going to happen 140 days from now.
Well, extremely afraid. I don't know if you should be extremely afraid. If you're aware, you should be preparing.
Well, yeah, but see, I'm a student, and I have almost no
visible means of support?
Yes. So I am going about my own ways of preparing.
What are those?
Well, see, I figure it's going to be a total social structure collapse. I mean, do you understand that?
At one end, that's a possibility.
I mean, so I figure I'm going to take a bunch of my fellow students, 20 or so, and we're going to go live off the land up north. I'm from Santa Rosa, California.
Mm-hmm.
Going to cruise up 101 and find some nice little...
You're going to do this 144 days from now, or you're going to do this soon?
No, I'm probably going to wait till the week before rollover.
Uh-huh. Well,
you might want to get a little bit of a head start.
Head start, yeah, I would say that too.
Yeah.
Our highways particularly out of the major cities, if things do go really wrong, are going to be quite clogged and unusable, aren't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Steve Shank and Art Bell. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
How are you? Good to talk to you, sir.
And to you.
My name is Solid. I'm off the coast of Miami.
You're off? Yeah, wait a minute. Excuse me. You're off the coast?
Yes. We're in a small island very close to Bimini.
No kidding.
Right. And we do security for this island and many other places. We do strategic security international. And I just wanted to, by the way, I've been working on the Y2K situation for over a year. And our computer department, which is really very high-tech, doesn't feel that it will be a problem. Now, what I've done is I've used Gary North's website, GaryNorth.com,
right,
as a guide, and we've come up with a presidential order, an executive order that was passed in 96 that created a PCCIT commission, which is the Presidential Commission on Critical Infrastructure Protection. Are you aware of that?
No.
Because that's in Gary North's information, and your people should really check on that. It was created in 96 and signed by Clinton, and it states in the executive orders that Y2K is an acronym, and it really doesn't exist, and that acronym is going to be coded cyber terrorism shortly. In fact, it already has been coded that and starting to be called that. And the reason we're not hearing about a lot of Y2K is because it happens on a specific date at a specific time, and it affects everything, but cyber terrorism can happen at any time and affect any system.
Well, that's absolutely true, but I think that suggesting that Y2K is nothing is wrong. I mean, just flat out wrong. And I am convinced, personally, that it is going to be something. I don't know how much of something, and it may well be that power companies will get out there and there'll be workarounds. But common sense, I mean, we lost the western third power grid of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico because one lousy little station went off in Idaho.
Right.
So,
well, there's another thing, Art, that distresses me when some of these organizations come on and say, we are now Y2K compliant.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that if the power grid is not up to speed,
then they're not
going to have anything to be compliant with.
That's correct. That's the big worry for me is the power grid.
And my little computer sitting in front of me right now is probably going to be fine. But if that goes down, if it did go down, it wouldn't be significant. It would be significant to my business, but it wouldn't affect you or anyone else. The stuff that's going to affect you and me and everyone is the input to that source.
Boy, I don't know. We're pretty dependent. Even me, as independent as I have tried to make myself, yesterday I lost my ISDN line, my frame rate line to Dallas and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I felt like somebody cut my right leg off. So I'm terribly technology dependent. And
well,
I am going to, and if the internet goes down, I'm going to be crying big crocodile tears. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Steve Shank. Hi.
Hey, hi there. Got a couple questions and a statement.
Sure. Where are you, by the way?
Orlando.
Okay.
First off, what ward are you in?
What ward am I in?
Yeah.
I'm in the American Fork State.
The what?
I'm in American Fork, Utah.
Oh, okay. American Fork ward.
And I'm in the second ward, the second Manila ward.
Oh, second Manila ward. All right, whatever. Now I'm in semi ward. I was just curious.
Okay.
The other thing is, how big is that kit? That kit you were talking about, the second one, the small one.
Oh, the little one. What we're putting together is what we call a short pack, and that's going to be a good solid 3 month supply.
Okay. And the statement was, the guy that was just on that says he does security. I do security here at a timeshare, and we've been experienced glitches. Crashes, and in fact, the computers were crashed this afternoon.
Wow.
They're a long way from being Y2K compliant.
Yeah.
And this is a nice timeshare. and it's a long way from being. It's going to crash, big time crash.
All right, sir. I appreciate the call. Thank you. There's a lot of people out there telling the truth about this, and I, you know, I took the time and trouble to go. I talked to my own power company, the gas company here, and I really am not at liberty to give you all the details, but they're not all that thrilled with the prospects.
Well, I've got two situations that just kind of came to me. One of my good friend's associate, a gal that keeps me out of a lot of trouble, lives up in Wyoming, and one of the people that she knows works for one of the power companies in one of the surrounding states, and they have acquired generators for some of their key personnel and place them in their homes.
I know.
So that they can continue to function.
I'm very well aware of this.
The other thing that I ran into is these good friends that I was referring to down in Lufkin, Texas, have some folks that work for one of the major oil companies. And there was an interesting discussion where they were the people in the oil company were discussing what was going to happen, and they're essentially going to shut down their refineries in one of the areas here in the country about a week prior to the turn.
They will also begin to ration electricity about a week prior, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a plan that's in place, and all kinds of things are going to begin to occur as we near the date. All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Steve Shank. Hi.
Hi. I had two questions. The first is two parts, and actually, I think, Mr. Shank, you might have actually answered my second question. The first one in two parts is, do you anticipate being able to have a supply to ship out to customers in, say, August through, like, say, November of this year? And you know, in a relatively short time frame? That's my first question.
Well, it's been our policy to absolutely never back order. There's some very strong reasoning behind that. But at this point, with the anticipation of a serious flood to the market, we have geared up. We're stronger. Our suppliers are stronger than any other possible source in the country. And they have gone back into their supply lines and have geared up, actually, the growers and the suppliers to them. So we have very strong supply lines, but there's no way of predicting how severe the flood will be.
Or when.
Yeah.
My second question, I think you've kind of answered, because when I inquired with the company and got the information, a year supply comes out, I think, to $1,700, $1,800, which is not really that bad when you look at it 365 days a year. It's like $5 a day for three meals. But in the short time allowed, I don't have that personally right now, but I guess you're talking about a three-month pack.
Yeah.
The company is advertised on this show as, you know, generally caring about people, and I think that's a good thing that you guys are going towards because it does help more people. It allows more people to get in at least some kind of a supply, and plus it helps you guys, you know, because you have business to run.
That's exactly why we're doing it. The problem that we had before with everyone back ordering and the supply lines being crucial in most of the industry, just to be able to handle the volume of activity, we had to ask people to make no changes and to be able to ship out consistent blocks. We have geared up personnel, and now we've been wanting to do this for some time. Now we are able to break it down to where we have a three-month packet. This will put it well within the range of people. With regard to the pricing that you were mentioning, it would be a bit less than what you mentioned, but we always make sure that the units or year supplies or quarter packs that we ship out have much, much greater value than what it would appear. They will always replace, in most cases, about twice the dollar value of food that you can acquire any other way, like canned goods, for example.
Yeah, I mean, $5 a day for three meals, like if I had the sources right now, I'd probably go for a year supply myself, but I think this is good that you guys, and I'm sure I would imagine that a lot of this came from people asking for things, you know, a shorter supply because of the, you know, because of financial constraints?
Actually, there have been people asking, but most of it came from our dealing with how people were having to store, and also the fact that we've been at this for long enough so that in order to get a nutritionally balanced quantity of food in economically sized containers, this has been our real challenge. We've got that resolved right now.
Is that available now, or is that still something that's in the works as far as the three-month
package? It has not been announced, but if you were to call in on the 800 number, the gals that are answering the phone have it available to them. They can describe it to you and price it for you.
Okay, great.
And then Art will be announcing it.
I think this is a good idea, too, because, you know, no one knows what's going to happen with Y2K, and the time is getting short, you know, to be prepared. So
all right,
thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Thank you for making it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Art Bell and Steve Shank. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello. Where are you?
This is Jeff. I'm a truck driver. And I just want to make one quick comment was, you know, your regular medicinal stuff like aspirins and acids, stuff like that, you know, I used to, when I was in the service, and you didn't have medics around all the time to get that stuff, and you were really hurting if you didn't bring it with you.
Good.
Yep, it's fact.
Any people that are on medications, right now in our family, we're working very hard to get some of the family members who have physical conditions that need to be resolved. We're trying to get everybody healthy as much as possible. And then we're trying to do something to have a reserve of some of the medications that are necessary. Some of them are very hard, and it's a difficult issue, but this should be addressed by families that have medical needs.
Yeah, and another point I wanted to make real quick was, you know, everybody's talking about guns and personal protection. Dogs, pets, make great protection. They bond with people really well, and... No, no one I've ever really heard so far on Art Show mention that yet.
Yes, I have cats. Catzilla.
Yeah, well...
Catzilla.
Maine Coon cats work really well, too. They're pretty big.
You know, and the interesting thing on the dogs, a lot of times folks assume that a big, burly, nasty dog is better protection. Actually, in most cases, you'll find that the little yappy buggers will be alarmed. There'll be alarms, and people typically do not take them out.
Yeah, but I also favor the ones with the big jaws that lock and don't come unlocked.
I understand. I've got both kinds. Okay?
Yes, indeed. So you hit them at both angles. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Art Bell and Steve Shank. Hi.
Good morning, Art. How are you doing?
Just fine. Where are you?
I am Cameron in Gulfport, Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
Wonderful to hear your voice resonating back on the airways, voice of reason. Great to hear you.
Thank you.
Steve, nothing but a comment. In this time when you're talking about Y2K and the necessities of protecting one's family's interest through storage of food, it is so refreshing to hear someone with your level of common sense, your obvious commitment to the integrity of your company, and the way you are handling your business. I've listened to Art's program, and he has many quality guests, but I am most impressed by your dedication to doing what's right. And if there were more people in this country dedicated to doing the right thing, we'd be a heck of a lot better off. I commend you for your integrity and your interest and your service to all the people that you're trying to help. Thank you very much.
Well, Cameron, I deeply appreciate your comment. And It's just absolutely wonderful to hear that someone resonates with the attitude that we've got. And it's not just me. It's all of my backup folks, the J. Michael Stevens group. These people are really wonderful folks to work with. And thank you so much for the encouragement.
Well, you're certainly welcome. It's obvious you're doing very fine things. And if more companies, business, and industry were as dedicated as you obviously are, we'd be a lot better off as a nation.
Well, we wouldn't be facing what we're apparently facing. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Steve Shank and Art Bell, and not a lot of time. Hi.
Good
Good morning. My name is Mark, calling from Norfolk, Virginia.
Hi, Mark.
A quick comment and a question. Normally, Art, I'm out in the morning doing a 10 or 12 mile run with my headphones on listening to your show. And it really drives me crazy because a lot of your guests have a lot of good information about storing food or whatnot, getting ready for Y2K, but they never talk about physical fitness. And to me, that's like the simplest thing you need to take care of. I mean, it doesn't come in a bottle or anything.
Absolutely.
So you need to get physically fit, do a little exercise, get ready for whatever's coming down the pike. Okay, a question for Steve. I've been collecting, you know, the regular canned goods and stuff from the grocery store. How long will my canned goods keep, and spaghetti and ramen noodles? How long will all that stuff keep?
Hmm.
Generally speaking, we used to tell folks that it'd take that they'd last about 1 to 3 years, but now with some of the blow molded cans and the excessive amount of heat that sometimes is used in canned goods, some of the stuff is in the range of 6 to 9 months. The real concern, though, Mark, is not necessarily the storability of it. It's very bulky, very heavy if you'd have to move. But the most important thing is nutritional levels. One of the reasons that we go with the dried food and a different process of drying is that you need to maintain, you were talking about health, you need to maintain the maximum nutritional level you can possibly get. And canned goods drops quite a bit in the process.
All right. Steve, it has really been a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, it's been absolutely delightful.
I knew it would work out well, and it did. So, my friend, thank you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Will do it.
Good night.
You keep doing what you're doing, because it's doing a lot of good.
Thanks, Steve, and good night to you.
Take care, Art.
That's it. Tomorrow night, Whitley Strieber will be here. What a treat. Monday, too. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Good night.